Welcome one and all to another day, another week here at the Damage Report with me, John Arola. It is a fantastic Monday, and thus Francesca Fiorentini appears. How's it going, Francesca?
What's up?
How's it going? What's new with you?
You know, this and that, things. What? I don't know. It's hot. I'm trying to make friends with anyone who has a pool. So if you have a pool, can I come?
I do not. I have a hose, but no pool, unfortunately.
Anyway,
I'm glad that you started by bringing up the heat. I consider doing like an updated story about the heat wave. It'll probably come tomorrow on the show, partially because I think a lot of people who watch the show don't need you to remind them how hot it is. Also, it's about the climate, so no one would watch it.
Right.
But I feel a little bit bad complaining about the heat. It's hot here. But I was on a call with a friend who lives outside of Houston, and he was like, oh, you know, it got better. It's 98. And I thought, maybe I shouldn't complain too much. It's pretty bad in other parts of the country. I don't know if you're in a different part of LA than me. Is it just generally cooler?
No, you live in a lovely, breezy area. I am in just swamp ass Los Angeles, so.
Yeah, they should rename that. I don't think that's doing anything for property values. But anyway, we will be talking about the heat soon enough. Don't worry, we don't have to rush because these heat waves are now record breaking. So that's fun. But anyway, that doesn't leave a lot of time to talk about a bunch of different stuff on the show, and we will. We're going to be talking about what sort of voters Trump, DeSantis, all of those are going to be dueling over in this Republican primary. We have some new polls in regards to them. A little bit more bad legal news for Donald Trump in one of the cases of his we haven't talked about in a little week. We've got Mike Pence seeming to like, he really does want to have his life put on the line for these voters again. And we ended last week talking about the new standards for teaching Black history in Florida. The right wingers have decided to double or maybe triple down at this point on those absurd ahistorical positions. So we're going to be updating you on that as well. And then that's just in the first hour. In the aftermath, what do we got? We got Barbie. Bunch of pathetic men who either haven't seen it or didn't hate it, having to pretend for money that they hate it. So that'll be fun. And also, Arizona deciding to give a major middle finger to the Supreme Court when it comes to their voting map. So that's going to be a fun story to end the show with. Way before then, though, hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, we'll not only respond to them to the extent that we can, but one of you might just get a Blue Apron gift card for $100. So the only way to get that is to send in a message. So get those started. And with all that said, Francesca, you ready to start this thing?
Let's get it started in here.
If you continue singing that, we're going to get a copyright strike.
Oh, yes.
So be careful. But anyway, we've got serious stuff coming. We're gonna start with something a little bit lighter, though, to cleanse the palate. So let's start with this.
My question is, how has your faith grown since you decided in 2015 to run for president? And who has mentored you in your faith journey?
Great question.
It's such a great question. You know, I've seen so much heartache and turmoil. I was a developer and I did other things. And, you know, I had a wonderful life before all this stuff. I didn't know what a grand jury was. I didn't know what a subpoena. What is a subpoena?
I didn't know what a grand jury was. I didn't know what the question was. What am I supposed to be saying? Where am I? What year is it? He was asked a question there by a woman who I'm sure is lovely. And she seems very religious. And she's very interested in the religion of the candidate that she's going to support. So she wants to know about his personal faith journey. And so obviously he starts about talking about the fact that he developed real estate and he gets sued a lot. Now, look, a lot of people are throwing these clips out there and saying he doesn't answer the question, which I don't think is 100% true. I think it's 99% true. He touches on what could almost be an answer. So let's give him the very limited credit that perhaps he has earned. Then we'll make fun of him, but first a little bit more.
I had a wonderful life. I'm so glad they asked me the other day a little different question. Are you glad you did it? You had a great life. Are you glad you did it? I couldn't be more glad. I am so happy I did it because I've made America great. We can do it again. Right now, we are not a great country. We are not a great country. gotten to know, because of this, evangelicals, I mean, I know so many people, and they feel so good about themselves and their family, and they base it on religion. I had never had that kind of an experience where I got to know so many. And Franklin Graham and Paula White, I mean, I know so many people that are so incredible, religious people, and not just Christians, not just evangelicals. You know, when I look at the Catholic faith, you take a look at what the FBI, no, but look at what the FBI is doing to Catholics.
So I gave him the 1% credit because he did technically mention meeting religious people, which is the closest he comes to an answer. But I love that, like, what passes for diversity is, and not just Christians, let's talk about the Catholics, everyone. Oh, okay, well, you are very broad in your experience. But I will just say, and then I'll throw it to you, Francesca. If he is asked to explain his faith journey and how his views on religion have changed over time, and he says, I met evangelicals and they seem to really like themselves because of religion. That is, I do not know how you can think that Donald Trump is a religious person. That is like, if I programmed an AI and that's the best it was able to do is some religious people seem to be happy. Mm-hmm. It is not a thing that is core to your being, core to your ideology. It's, and he's not even years into this, Francesca, he's not even able to fake being a religious person.
That I think is the most stunning part of this non-answer, is that after all these years and after being given so much leeway by the evangelical right, Donald Trump still has not even come up with a line, just a thing to say about his faith, a thing to say about religion and his own Christian faith, probably, even if he doesn't believe it, even if he's never read the Bible, like even if he doesn't know how to pronounce Franklin Graham's name correctly.
Sorry, that's Graham. Franklin Graham.
It is Graham.
No, he's an idiot. He doesn't know.
No, he's an idiot. No, I'm telling you, like when I call him head wound Hitler, I feel like it is both a slight to people who have suffered head wounds and Hitler, if that is even possible. But if he went like this and he was like, oh God, you know, and I'm just like, and he was just bleeding from the back of his skull, be like, yeah, that makes sense, because your brains are literally leaking out of them. Like it is. He cannot, number one, he cannot keep focus. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have a stock answer. And so the only thing I'll say is that it's kind of why MAGA, and I mean the very amoral, not at all religious, totally doesn't care about hypocrisy, totally doesn't care about consistency, just likes him for his like unfettered racism and misogyny and bluster. That's why MAGA likes him, because he cannot lie. He cannot even make up what's like a lie that he's rehearsed. He just says what's on his mind, which is, I don't know, you guys religious people, you're pretty nice. I mean, you like believe that stuff? That's crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know why we do these segments, which we do very often. He's not trying to appeal to me or whatever. Clearly, I'm an atheist. And the conservatives, the religious that he's trying to appeal to, probably don't watch his show very much, you know, to their discredit. But if it's actually a thing that is important to you, how does that woman who asked that question come out of that answer and think, oh, he shares my values?
No.
Like, And I know that this is not the way that this works, but why isn't it the way that it works that a person like me, for instance, who will openly admit, I don't believe in any of these gods. I think that they're all made up, but I have values that I think are probably more emblematic of what a lot of religious people say the religion that they follow teaches them, than this guy who is obviously lying. He obviously doesn't value this stuff. I'm not saying that he thinks of himself as an atheist. Maybe he on some level thinks that a God exists, but he clearly doesn't care at all about it. Why doesn't that bother them? Why, after all of these fumbling, bumbling, embarrassing own goals on the topic of religion, has it not gotten through to any of them? Like when he can't name, literally just pick an older New Testament, pick one. You can pick either. It doesn't matter.
I like them both equally. Like you cannot even lie. No, but and I think that's actually the insidious part with religious leaders who still support Trump, is the way that they're trying to like reverse engineer his piety, that he actually, because he is such a rampant sinner, POS a-hole, he's like King David before the rebbe. I don't know, I haven't read the Bible. You know what I'm saying? He's the most sinner, he's the worst, ergo he's gonna usher in sort of a new dawn of religiosity and awakening. Like what? Like, and these are the people obviously who are just in it for, you know, fame and clout and to be next to the president. But it's just amazing that they keep on duping their congregations around how religious or how moral this guy is when he's everything but.
100%. Yeah, and look, you can be like, if that woman like ends that segment, like, man, that sucked. He clearly doesn't believe about this, but I believe that Hillary Clinton's gonna eat baby faces, so I guess I'm gonna support him anyway. That's fine. I mean, it's not, it's terrible, but like that's something. But to be like, yes, he's the religious one, he's the new Moses. Dear God. Like, yeah. Like imagine if all I cared about, and I know some people like Jordan think that this is true, all I care about is the MCU. I think it's the most important thing ever. And I was to like, I was to ask Francesca, who's your favorite superhero? And she's like, there's one who's like green or something. And I'm like, you're the best. Oh my God. Like, how is this convincing
at this point? You should not worship me at all.
Yeah, cause like, do you mean the Hulk? Or are you talking about like Vision in the color palette that he's depicted in the comic book form?
Isn't there a lantern that's green also? Like that's confusing.
That's
right
not
off the bat. Whatever.
Okay, with that said, I am not asking that question rhetorically. Why is it that they accept that? I have a potential answer that maybe that's not the thing that's most important to them. New poll coming out on Trump voters and self-identified Republicans, what they think about racism in America. Now, I know what you think. You think they're gonna say racism isn't an issue, and you'd be wrong. They do think it's an issue, just not the issue that perhaps they should. I'm gonna start off by giving them a little bit of credit, very briefly. Among 2020 Trump voters, 62% say that racism against Black Americans is a problem today. Now, if we just pause there, that sounds okay. I mean, it's absurdly low, and you're gonna soon find out that it doesn't mean what you think it means, but that's at least something. The issue is that the graphic does not end there. 73% say that racism against white Americans is a problem. More than say it about Black Americans. And like, I don't think that polls mean everything. I don't think that they're the best thing ever, but there's just a lot in that graphic. It says so much about you and your worldview that you'd be like, oh, sure. Black people do experience some racism, but have you heard about racism against the Irish? Like that just, that says a lot about you. Now, let's break it down a bit more. When they say it's a problem, how much of a problem? Well, 19% of Trump voters describe racism against Black Americans as a big problem. So that means that 2/3 of those who graciously, mercifully are willing to admit that it's a problem don't think it's a big one. Twice as many say racism against white Americans is a big problem. So they're not saying like, hey, there's racism that everybody faces. I mean, I know, sure, there's that structural stuff, but I think Karen is a racial slur or whatever. So it's like, there's racism against everyone. Mm-hmm. No, they think it's a bigger problem. And by the way, they are the only, Trump voters, self-identified Republicans, are the only demographic groups who are more likely to say racism against white Americans is a problem than to say the same about racism against Black Americans. So look, there is a lot that ties these people together, but this like totally world turned upside down view of race and racism, I think is one of the strongest things linking them. Francesca,
absolutely.
What do you think?
Yeah, and that is what differentiated Donald Trump from Republican candidates who are running in that primary in 2016, 2015, but then also in years prior, right? The ability to actually just take off the, you know, take out, swallow the dog whistle, put on the white hood and say the white race, as if that's a thing, is embattled, right? Because it's not even like, oh, it's the Irish and the Swiss are being targeted. That'd be one thing. That'd be very, very different. But no, this is again this sort of very broad identification with whiteness, which is very much a red flag for anyone who does so. And I think like this is what they've been fed through Newsmax, through Fox News, through all the other whatever rando subreddits that they're on that tell them that they are embattled. And it gives them an like kind of a struggle, an identity, something to do. It is white identity politics at its most dangerous and scary. And that's what Trump tapped into, and that's what he keeps on tapping into. And that is straight up white nationalism. That's why the David Dukes of this country are super excited about Donald Trump. And they were excited and still are, I guess, about Tucker Carlson. But this is the main thing. It's like, this is why we need CRT. This is why we need to understand our history. Because if you don't, you just see that we're talking about racism. Your fifis get hurt, but you're not able to put that into a broader context of structural context, a historical context, any way to depersonalize it. Instead, you heard someone, yes, say Karen, and you're like, what are my feelings? You know, I'm calling the cops. So yeah, if you're born yesterday, if you have the privilege to not have anything else to worry about, housing, healthcare, a job, you're probably gonna think that yeah, white racism against white people, first of all, is a thing, people. Last thing I'm gonna say, John, I don't know how you feel about this, but let's get our words straight and our definition straight. Racism against white people is not a thing. You can be bigoted, you can have discriminatory beliefs, but racism is a structure, it's a construct that was created by white supremacy based on histories of slavery and everything else, right?
Yeah.
So you cannot be racist against white people.
Exactly.
You can have bigoted views, but that structural stuff doesn't exist.
Exactly. But to them, the experience that they were once called a cracker on Twitter or whatever is to them the exact same thing as a legacy of centuries of slavery or whatever. Worse actually, because did you know that there were great benefits of slavery? We'll get to that in a little bit. Anyway, just super fast. If you believe this stuff about race, you will believe almost anything. And I want to demonstrate that. Here are two memes that Trump rebleeded. First from Ted Nugent. I think it's actually the real Ted Nugent. And then from Fruit Snacks. I get all of my political opinion from Fruit Snacks. Yeah. January 6th will go down in history as the day the government staged a riot. And as many people have noted, Donald Trump controlled the government on January 6th, you colossal moron. There's very few words in that meme. And even those don't have to mean anything because they have done no thinking whatsoever about what they wrote on the meme. Anyway, I just want to briefly let you know before we move on, we have to get to our B block. Donald Trump did get an update on one of the cases that he faces. This is the Stormy Daniels hush money payments. He had been trying to get the lawsuit moved to federal court, probably for a few reasons. One, he might think that he would have a better chance of either delaying it or getting a jury that'd be more favorable towards him. But more importantly, he wants to get all of the state level stuff to federal courts as much as possible so that if he becomes president, he can cancel it out. It's not gonna happen in this case. It can be appealed, but as of right now, it looks like he is going to stand trial in the hush money payment case as early as next spring. So spring is really looking like it's gonna be a busy time for appearances in court for Donald Trump. And that's a real shame. Okay, with that said, we do need to move ahead to our next block. So let's jump right into this.
I think it's a very dangerous thing to even talk about.
Okay.
Because we do have a tremendously passionate group of voters, much more passion than they had in 2020, much more passion than they had in 2016. I think it would be very dangerous.
Does that kind of rhetoric worry you?
Well, it doesn't worry me because I have more confidence in the American people and in the people in our movement.
Mike Pence, a guy who has been very nearly at the literal receiving end of the violence that Trump is trying to stoke with comments like that, not at all worried. He has a lot of confidence in the American people. The American people, I will remind you, who tried to overthrow the government on January 6th. Not a lot of them necessarily, but we've also learned that it doesn't take a lot. It takes a few hundred, maybe 1,000 to do a coup. It takes a few to try to assassinate politicians. It does not take tens of millions to utterly destroy our society. And he believes it's not worth speaking out against. Even though, as Dana Bush is gonna point out to him, he was targeted by this. So take a look.
That's pretty remarkable that you're not concerned about it, given the fact that they wanted to hang you on January 6th. I want to move on to the issues that you were talking about.
Well, Dana, wait a minute. Now, I want to say to you, there's been an effort to take those that perpetrated violence on January 6th and use a broad brush to describe everyone in our movement.
No, I didn't mean to do that.
Tell you. It's not the case. The people in this movement, the people who rallied behind our cause in 2016 and 2020 are the most God-fearing, law-abiding, patriotic people in this country. And I won't stand for those kind of generalizations because they have no basis in fact.
Yeah, and what I meant was that it has the potential to incite those who were incited on January 6th.
Yeah, obviously. And it was well done by her. I love the idea that if they had succeeded and they were like stringing Mike Pence. I was going to call him something else. Mike Pence up on the gallows, that like as the light drained from his eyes, his last words would be, "You're not representative." Like, yeah. But they exist and they tried to murder you. They would have murdered other people if they had succeeded. They were breaking down doors like the hordes in zombie movies. Uh-huh. But his concern is that you're painting with too broad of a brush. By the way, there were not that many people at the Capitol on January 6th. But when you ask Trump supporters what they think about the people at January 6th, do they reject them? Do they condemn them? The law-abiding people are perfectly fine with what those people did on January 6th. So they weren't there, maybe because they couldn't afford the trip, but they support what happened.
Absolutely. I think this is the most ridiculous thing to try and disown January 6th. And Trump's done it. Obviously, Pence is doing it. It's like, you know, that's the way to alienate your base. Your base came out for you real hard that day. A lot of them are serving jail time. More should be serving time for what they did that day. And now you're gonna disown them or say like, that's not our movement. No, they went to bat for you, arguably. I mean, it was all illegal and violent. And yeah, they wanted to hang you, but guess what? This is the party. The MAGA movement is a movement of political violence. So what's it gonna be? Are you on board with that or are you not?
100%. Okay, we're gonna go to our first break. Lots more to talk about on the other side, so don't go anywhere.
Oh, getting very emotional.
I know. I believe in radical honesty and transparency with the audience. There is no reason for this because I have not yet had my child. I am so tired, so exhausted all the time. I don't know how I'm gonna make it.
But the news won't exhaust you for just a brief moment, John. When you check in, it'll be like the moldy, you know, piece of like leftovers in the back of your fridge. You'll be like, oh, and then you close it and then put it back. That's the news.
Clean out your fridge.
Well.
Anyway, okay, we got a lot to get to, so we're gonna jump into our next story. So that is just a tiny little sampling of a video that people who are supporters of Ron DeSantis put out on Twitter. It's mostly been taken down from Twitter for reasons we'll get into. Not because of what was in the video, that was just great from the point of view of Ron DeSantis supporters. No, it was that apparently, as you can see in this tweet from Luke Thompson, a campaign staffer for Ron DeSantis retweeted it. Now, why would that be a problem? Well, if it's not clear from the video or from that shot right there, we can move ahead to this. And you can see the symbol that they decided to overlay over Ron DeSantis's face while soldiers marched past him. As Luke Thompson points out, that's a Sonnenrad. Now, most of you are not gonna be familiar with what that is because in the last 7 or 8 years, you've touched grass. But for pathetic white men between the age of 19 and 26, it's really cool and edgy. Because you see, it's the black sun. It's a symbol the Nazis used. So it's cool, right? If you put it over a politician you like, am I cool? Is it cool? Am I edgy? Am I fun? Come on, I'm trying to use the lessons I've learned from Elon Musk. Is this working? Is our movement awesome now? Well, of course, they fill these videos with that imagery constantly. And a Trump, or Trump, a DeSantis campaign staffer thought, that's great. Our guy's face over basically a swastika with soldiers running by, that's a great thing. And remember, they're in the middle of a campaign rebrand, so they're probably looking for new imagery. You can see here, he told his donors recently, we just need to let Ron be Ron. Well, Ron didn't make this ad, but we know the ads he's supported in the past. Is he going to condemn this sort of imagery, or is he gonna give a little wink and a nod, hoping to get some sort of online juice going on? Francesca, what do you think?
I wish it were funny at all. Like, I wish these were just nerds. I mean, they are, but obviously that's denigrating actual nerds. These are white nationalists. These are Nazis, and they love people like Ron DeSantis for his stance around stopping woke, which we all know means ending like Black history. Taking away civil rights, deporting migrants seeking refuge in his state. Like, that's what it is. It is a white nationalist platform. And so it's just like, my question is, what happens when Ron DeSantis and his whole campaign realizes that's what it is? Then they delete it. They're like, oh God, no, I mean, not that far. Or they're like, it just wouldn't look good, but we all secretly agree. Like, what do they do? Does anyone quit out of like outrage? Like, you know, I really thought this was a Christian campaign for, you know, equality for all and American values. No, man. First of all, let's be real. They all think that they're hearkening back to real America and American values. They're not. Even our dumbass founding fathers, the slaveholders that were our founding fathers, at least had a little bit of an ideal, massive blind spots, but a little bit of an ideal of like, yeah, equality for all, right? Except for women and whatnot. But like, I'm saying like, they do not want to go back to the idea of an America and a democracy that is thriving and growing. No, they want Hitler. They want like, you know, like a militarized ethnocentric nation. That's what they want.
That's what they want. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, I see people talking about Granny Dragon saying, I wonder how many World War II veterans still living in Florida. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, as they often say, freedom isn't free. It requires sacrifice. It required many of these great Americans to go and fight the Nazis so that two generations later, their descendants could be Nazis again. That's fun. Anyway, oh, by the way, as annoying as these sorts of ads are, like the really pathetic, overly online, lonely white men who descend into fascism just as a replacement for going outside and meeting people are getting older, and they're taking over positions of leadership in the Republican Party. This is kind of weird and fringe and online now. It's just going to be like, there's not going to be anything in the Republican Party except the fash wave people and Marjorie Greene. That's what the party is going to be. Like all, like the Mitch McConnells and stuff, they're all dying. Like they're dying off, and they're not being replaced with new, like slightly less racist, just pro-business Republicans. It's all fascism, floor to ceiling. So everybody buckle up for the next few decades.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to move on to our next topic, which also unfortunately has to do with Ron DeSantis. So we're going to do this video and then jump into Graphic 8, but let's jump immediately into this video.
Well, you should talk to them about it. I mean, I didn't do it and I wasn't involved in it. But I think what they're doing is, I think that they're probably going to show some of the folks that eventually parlayed, you know, being a blacksmith into doing things later in life. But the reality is, all of that is rooted in whatever is factual. They listed everything out. And if you have any questions about it, just ask the Department of Education. You can talk about those folks. But I mean, these were scholars who put that together. It was not anything that was done politically.
Okay, so take a look at that. So Florida's Board of Education or whatever, it's still technically called that. It doesn't serve that purpose anymore. They've decided, we're going to teach the good side of slavery, all the useful skills you got as a slave. And Ron DeSantis wants to put distance between himself and that, saying, I didn't do it, I didn't have anything to do it. But it's great. I think it's awesome. I think they're gonna be focusing. He obviously is a massive fan of this, but it's not political, but he definitely supports it. It's just based on the facts. So if you have an issue with it, take up your issues with the facts, which we will do, because as many have pointed out, this isn't just offensive and propagandistic, it's also utterly ahistoric. So in response to the criticism, William Allen, Francis Presley Rice, they're Florida education officials. So they put together these new standards. They put out a statement saying, the intent of this particular benchmark clarification is to show that some slaves developed highly specialized trades from which they benefited. This is factual and well documented. Any attempt to reduce slaves to just victims of oppression fails to recognize their strength, courage, and resiliency. Yes. So the people who are saying, hey, slavery wasn't that bad, they're the ones who are honoring the strength and courage. But that's not the important part of this, Francesca. The important part is they decided we're gonna put out 16 examples of slaves that lived the sort of lives that we're talking about, that got these useful skills and thus benefited from being enslaved brutally. Except that, as many people have pointed out, they don't appear to have either cared or been capable of doing the research, the facts that scholars put together, Ron DeSantis said. So of their 16 examples, they include Booker T. Washington, listed in the statement as a teacher. He was enslaved, which many of the people on this list you'll find were not, but did not gain his skills until after being freed at age 9. He did not get trained to be a teacher as a 6-year-old slave. That's not true. They just wanted to put a name that they thought people would recognize on the list. They listed Henry Blair as a slave who became a blacksmith and an inventor. Ron DeSantis actually mentioned blacksmithing in particular, implying that he knows of this plan. Well, anyway, there's no indication that he was enslaved. He invented a corn planter and a cotton planter. He became the second black person to earn a US patent, but no indication that he was actually a slave. Paul Cuff was a shoemaker, ship owner, born into slavery, escaped to freedom in 1781. He apparently was born to an emancipated slave. Having worked on whaling boats starting at age 14, he established a shipping business in Massachusetts. So they listed him as having been born into slavery. Scholars say that's not true. He was born to an emancipated slave. We could go on and on. There's John Chavis, fisherman born into slavery, who later was known for his work in fishing. No, he was apparently born into a free black family in North Carolina, fought in the Revolutionary War. So either they don't know, in which case they're bad scholars, or they do know and they're just lying, in which case they're bad people. But if this is the cover that you have for your new standards, well, I would say you need to go back to the drawing board, but accuracy, of course, is not what they're going for here.
No, and it's all of the direction of Ron DeSantis. Department of Education in Florida is answering to the governor, answering to Ron DeSantis, and this is deliberate. You think in order to like miswrite, like it's one thing to get one person wrong in terms of their history and whether they were born into slavery or not. But the multiple figures, historical figures, they're just completely rewriting it. They're saying that they somehow, despite being enslaved, chattel slaves, despite being whipped, despite being raped, that this is what they were able to, I mean, it's like, it's disgusting to me, and I'm just like, even, let's just imagine there were all these benefits. Oh my God, so much like job training. Tell me that it was somehow worth it with the amount of violence that people had to endure. Like, say with a straight face, watch 12 Years a Slave. You don't have to read anything, just watch the movie. Watch the movie, 12 Years a Slave. Arguably, it's actually like not as bad as maybe what it actually was like. It's a movie after all. So it's gonna have a little bit of a silver lining. Just watch that and be like, no, it was worth it because they learned, you know, how to plant things. They learned how to cook. Like, no.
So I guess it was. We're even on the murder, the rape, the breaking up of families, the torture, Look, and what I always find most impressive about this is that these people will go to a screening of The Sound of Freedom or whatever that Jim Cavazio movie or whatever is about, like modern day slavery, and this is, we need a crusade against it. And then they'll go into their job and be like, you know, slavery wasn't really that bad. You gain valuable skills. Like, pick one lane to authentically actually care about. and not just opportunistically in a vague sense, disconnected from real people. Can you do that once? We're gonna take our second break. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about dogs. Unfortunately, these are dogs which are innocent, being put in positions where they can do great evil. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, we are going to be talking about and showing some very serious matter involves violence by the police. So I want you to be fully aware before we launch into it. But with that said, we are going to proceed with the hour. If you're just joining us now, please hit the like button. We're going to talk about some serious stuff. An unarmed black man was mauled by a police dog in Ohio after very clearly having surrendered. His hands were in the air. This is following a high speed chase, but at this point, it was over. The chase was over. He had already been taken by the police. Jadarius Rose, a 23-year-old. And unfortunately, despite all of that, this is what happened.
That's a dog. Come to me. You don't want bit.
On the ground. You get bit.
Come to me, man.
Do not let them. Don't release the dog. Do not release the dog with his hands up. Do not release the dog with his hands up. Do not release the dog with his hands up. Do not. Hey, do not get the dog off of me. Get the dog off of me.
Get the dog. Get the dog.
The thing about that video that makes it distinct from other absolutely horrendous videos that we've seen is that in this particular case, we actually had one person doing what we beg cops to do, which is to advocate for peace in these situations, to not full out escalate. You had a person just over and over saying, do not do this, do not do this. Everyone there can see that it's not necessary. The man is standing, he's not close to anything. He's got his hands in the air. No one is at any risk except for him. Because the person with the dog decided, I'm not gonna take the dog all the way out here and not maul a person with him. So despite being ordered multiple times not to do this, he releases the dog. The dog runs in a random direction. He then points the dog at the man and allows the dog to totally needlessly maul him. An experience that for any one of us would be maybe the worst thing that had ever happened to us was just totally optionally inflicted on another human being by that cop. Mm-hmm. Francesca, what do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, like I thought that voice was in my head saying, do not release the dog, do not release the dog. But like the other thing I'm wondering, like, did he say it loud enough? Like we could hear him because that's where the camera was coming from. But
it seemed like he was yelling.
Kind of. But not to the degree that we see them yell at so-called suspects, right? You know, screaming at them. But I think that's a perfect, like everything's calm. And how many times have we seen, I mean, look, we should do dash cam video where police don't escalate. But like, it is very, like 9 times out of 10 when we're watching these things, of course, it's like they needlessly release the dog. Because why? I guess you don't have control of that dog. That's what it sounds like to me. You just don't have control of it and you're gonna release it. And then sort of the way that everyone else walked very slowly, I felt like it was, I don't know. I felt like the reaction was way too slow. There was a little bit of a morbid fascination going on there with the other police officers.
Sure, yeah, I'm giving the guy credit for at least speaking up. Obviously it wasn't enough to stop this from happening. And it was still one person out of an entire group that was involved in a standoff. I'm just acknowledging that it at least is distinct from other videos where you very rarely hear them saying anything. Like, you know, and maybe honestly, maybe this is a situation where it's a little bit easier for the cop to feel like he can speak up because it's about releasing a dog. It might be a little bit harder to say, hey, you monster, stop beating this person. Mm-hmm. Maybe telling them not to do something with the dog might make it a little bit easier. But again, didn't actually help. Jadarius Rose has been released from jail. He said he couldn't talk about why he didn't initially stop. So basically he had to do like an inspection or something. He did not stop his car. which I guess in America for some reason is a death sentence. But anyway, he says, I'm just glad that it was recorded. What you saw is pretty much what happened. A spokesperson for the Highway Patrol said that Rose was unarmed. The only charge listed against him in the incident report is, quote, failure to comply with an order or signal of a police officer, and not complying with literally everything that the cop wants you to do, whether it's articulated or clear or whatever, is one of the most dangerous things that you could do in America. If you're not from America and you visit here, just always be as much on your guard as possible, but know that even being on your guard as much as possible will not necessarily save you if you are forced to interact with the police. Anyway, since we prepared this story, a use of force board has now been ordered to look into this. So yay, justice. I'm sure it'll be great what they come up with. But I do also want to say that outside of this particular use of a dog to brutalize someone, it's becoming more and more common, and not just by police. Insider did a deep dive on, I mean, not just in, you know, getting people when they're out and about. In police custody, dogs are being used more and more, and in prisons to intimidate and brutalize people. 12 states currently authorize the use of attack trained dogs in prisons. You can see right here. Oh, great. Connecticut, where I'm from, actively uses dogs. So that's awesome. Some departments argue that the presence of the dogs alone, when they bark and snarl and growl, that stops violence from happening. Others say it's a manpower multiplier that replaces corrections officers in dangerous situations. That's not a multiplier, that's just a replacement.
They're scabs too, is that what we're saying?
They'll use the exact same argument for robots as soon as the robots are capable of beating people up.
100%.
According to Insider, between 2017 and 2022, patrol dogs employed by state prisons were commanded to attack incarcerated people at least 295 times. The dogs also went rogue and bit corrections officers or other prison staff members at least 13 times. That's either them going rogue or them feeling like they need to fight back against the way that they are being abused and having to perpetuate this cycle of violence. Anyway, Insider has all of the details if you want to know more about this, but this is basically an epidemic. Not just cops out in the field using these dogs, but even once people are locked up, they're still in many cases being brutalized, mauled by dogs.
Prison attack dogs. I mean, like added to the list of how dehumanizing, degrading our prison system is, and completely overrun, and like, oh, freest country on earth, 2 million people inside of the prison system, get out of here. And we have this, and this is instead of, yeah, hiring more guards, having conditions that are more humane, ensuring that people are not subject to violence, that there aren't, you know, fights that break out. And so many, hey, give folks air conditioning. Maybe they're, you know, upset and having a bad day and are more readily aggressive because it's 100 degrees in their cell. Like, just No. Let's victimize animals and make them do this awful work. And then when we're done with those dogs and they're too aggressive for the real world to be useful, we'll just kill them. Tight. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And look, you know, to some extent it was a throwaway comment or whatever, but like when they can program a robot to take people down in the field or to, you know, discipline people in prison, they are 100% going to do it. The fact that they have to get people to do it, that they have to train them to be willing to do this, or dogs, that is an impediment to the sort of the scale of violence that they want. They are going to have robots that are going to be doing this stuff. We already see how excited they are to deploy them. And look, in San Francisco, there was talk about it, in LA. It is going to be so common. And what are you going to hope at some point, that like that people will be recording it, that they won't erase, you know, the logs of these robots? Like, the present is horrifying, but it makes me so worried about where we're going to be at, what we're going to be reporting on in 5-10 years. Anyway, we're going to move on in just a sec to our final story of the first hour. Not a light topic, but almost anything would be lighter than the attack dog, so that's something. But anyway, Kyle wanted to complete a thought of Francesca saying, this is an AB conversation, see your way out before D and E F you up G. Is that what you were going for?
Definitely. Okay. Now I'm just thinking about D and E blocks, so we're all
There you go.
You know, my favorite dragon is Skip the E Block Dragon. Is it Skip the E or Skip the D Block Dragon?
Skip the D. But we got to the D. We just didn't we? Yeah, we did the D Block.
My favorite dragon.
F in just a sec. Okay, so really fast. Spin Me a Sailcloth says Francesca, the man who came up with the Nordic theory, blonde hair, blue eyes, was an American named Madison Grant. Hitler was inspired by his book. As I've always said, books.
The Spinny.
I get. No, that's been around for a long time.
Oh, the I'm Nordic, saying, just like. Yeah. The white nationalism.
Yeah. By the way, I saw and I appreciate someone was like, you know, these symbols have been around for a really long time. I understand that. They're being used because of the one time though. They're not being used because of, oh, it was on a temple in 1450. They're being used because of the Nazi thing.
That's my favorite. It's like, no, the swastika is actually ancient. I was drawing it to harken back to before the bad thing.
Like, yeah. And by the way, like you're right. You're right, it has been around, no. But that's not why it was being used.
Sorry.
To be clear. Anyway, okay. Every Monday, we return to sort of sift through the evil and the awfulness of the weekend, and thus we bring to you your Monday Menace.
Hillary Clinton started talking about me. First, I laughed at that, and then I thought, oh my gosh.
Am I in trouble?
This is not funny. Yeah, Hillary Clinton's talking about me. And that's what I said. Hey, listen, I'm in perfect health. The brakes on my car have been checked, and they're in working order, and I am not suicidal, okay? When the Clintons start talking about you, you kind of tense up a little bit.
Oh, you get it. It's because the Clintons kill everyone. And so because Hillary Clinton mentioned Carrie Lake or something literally years ago, she was probably gonna kill her. That's Carrie Lake, who on the one hand is exactly the sort of person that you would expect that would be just spinning conspiracy theories to try to make herself seem like a victim from the scenario she made up in her own head. Because she is nothing right now. She's not an actual politician. She's like one of these weird people who's always like adjacent to politics, somehow making money off of it while holding no position of power. But at the same time, she could be a senator in a couple of years. She could be the vice president next year for all that we know. Yes. And this is the sort of person that you're gonna get. Francesca, what do you think?
I just think it's incredible that Hillary Clinton to the right is like bit like scarier than anything you've ever imagined, right? Like she is the chupacabra to the right. I love like she's all seeing, all knowing. She's if you don't be alone in dark, she goes on hikes and then she'll just attack you, right? She gets you. And you know, you can't say her name three times and little children are scared, like just all the things, all because like a woman dared to be a Democrat and wear like a pantsuit, you know? And she's not even that great of a politician, as of course, as progressives, we have massive disagreements. But like, all you gotta do is like, I don't know, be a woman in the public eye and refuse to push your tits up to your chin. And they're like, it's the chupacabra, like, it's amazing to me. And like, and this is the last thing I'll say. I can't believe we still ran Hillary Clinton. We meaning not us, but the Democratic Party ran Hillary Clinton after decades of all the hate drummed up against her. It's not a reason to not run, but my God, has the right had their way with like, you know, the Clintons, you know, just like let it go. If Chelsea Clinton gets involved into politics, I'm moving. I mean, I already want to move, but it's over.
It seems like she's not interested, thankfully. Yeah, look, that's not to me the reason to not run Hillary Clinton. The reason to not run Hillary Clinton is because people desperately wanted someone who was not a major insider in the system that was actually proposing real solutions. Hillary was an issue for a lot of reasons. But on top of that, yeah, they really did uniquely hate her more than almost anyone else. And that is what sustained insane conspiracy theories like this from Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake is just so desperate to be important. Like just the very idea that you would lay out that you might be assassinated by the Clintons, like you're not that important. Again, I will ask them, if Trump is so important, why isn't the deep state killed him? You think they're gonna kill you, Carrie Lake, before they kill Donald Trump, the guy who's gonna uncover this worldwide network of child cannibals or whatever? I think not. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna break for this hour. Thank you everyone who joined us. There's more to come in the aftermath though, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.